afternoon, everybody out there in internet radio land. This is Blake Ruby from San Antonio. Welcome to my show, Gods and Goddesses, or Goddesses and Gods. It doesn't matter which way they are around. We are all co-creator gods in the making, born on this world. And one day, hopefully in a distant future, we will transition into another kind of life, like the famous book by Raymond Moody called Life After Life. It's amazing. The situation we're a part of is awesome. I was talking with a friend today, and we were just marveling at how the creator of the universe created something out of nothing. Everything, all you see, at one time didn't exist. Before the Big Bang, that's what I believe in, the Big Bang. The universe began to form itself in accordance with the Creator's will, and one solar system began to form after another. Eventually, one galaxy was created, and then a new galaxy began forming one solar system after another. And here we are, many millions and billions, actually, of years later, light years from the center of the universe. And the universe continues to expand. The edges of infinite space are constantly growing. Isn't that amazing? As we speak, a new sun is being born, its nuclear fire at its core about to ignite and burn for billions of years, possibly. A new solar system is forming as we speak. So, I had a good week. I hope your week was nice, enjoyable. Hope your weekend is going well for you and you're enjoying yourself. I can hear the ice cream truck coming up the street outside. Ice cream. And then the air conditioning just turned on outside. It's funny how things are, the way they go. I don't eat a lot of sweets myself. I had something last night that was rather delicious. My wife and I went to a Greek restaurant, and we met a couple there, and we had a wonderful dinner together. I'm a vegan myself, and sometimes vegetarian. In other words, I'll eat some dairy products, food with eggs in it, but I don't eat meat. I haven't eaten meat for 21 years, since 1999, but they eat meat. Everyone I live with here in the house eats meat. My son, my whole family eats meat. But I did it for a couple of main reasons. One thing I think I've told you before on the previous show is that I had donated one of my kidneys to my son back in 1995 when I was in the Army. And also, just was gravitating towards a healthier lifestyle. I was into running a lot back then, and it just made sense to me to try to be healthier overall, to ensure my longevity. I didn't always treat myself well, something I'm not proud of. When I was younger, you know, I was a bit of a substance abuser, so to speak. I don't blame myself too much for it. I kind of don't blame anybody, but I know that I was shaped by my parents, like we all are, shaped and molded. And then we become, when we're 17, responsible, accountable for our actions, 18, 21. Well, in my opinion, I think that we are truly responsible for our actions when our parents pass away. Then we are on our own. We don't have them to talk with. They don't give us advice, guidance. They can't anymore. That's when we're truly responsible for our actions, my friends. That's what I believe. And even still, in this world where there's a lot of guilt and blame going around, we must try to think positive, rise above the negativity, and not blame ourselves for past mistakes without going into all the details. I know we've all been through that when we were younger. We did things we shouldn't have done. Some things are better left unsaid. There's so many other things to think about. And revel in the mystery of what's going on out there. This world is a beautiful planet. Awesome planet. I was just reading recently. I read a lot about spiritual matters, near-death experiences, especially if you are interested in going and looking for some really neat near-death experiences that are arranged in a organized way on a website. Lots and lots of near-death experiences, and they're sorted by all the different people and the different types. And it's called neardeath.com, with a dash in between near and death. And there you'll find hundreds of near-death experiences. And I've studied a lot myself. If they gave PhDs for near-death experiences, I would have one. I know that much about them. Let me tell you this one story, a near-death experience. And I've got a moral to it, the story, at the end. It's about prayer, how we should be praying for each other, praying to make things better, praying to end the pandemic, praying for a successful election coming up, praying for all the people involved, our leaders, Congress, the president, praying for the Democrats, praying for the Republicans, praying for the United States of America, for the world. So, you know how bitter this political situation has become, the divisiveness. It's no surprise, really, what's going on. The competition is fierce. They're saying things. You don't know what to believe. A lot of hearsay. Who's telling the truth? Who's lying? But one thing we know, or if you don't know, you should, and hopefully you will later, is that there is a power, a higher power, that is in control of everything, that can intervene at any time it wishes. It's done before in the past. Back in Moses' time, when Jesus walked the earth, intervention, divine intervention on a scale that's never been seen before, afterwards even, since then. So, in this story, a man by the name of Lou Formoso, he is a Vietnam veteran, comes back from Vietnam, I think he was with the Navy, served a couple of tours over there, and comes back to the United States in about 1964. Well, he's got a little extra money, so he goes and buys himself a brand new 1964 Ford Mustang. Beautiful car. And only problem is, once you take them to high speed, they become very unstable with all that weight in the front. So sure enough, he was going to a party on a Saturday night and going about 100 miles an hour down a country road. He lost control, flipped end over end, caught on fire. He was thrown from the car. He had a gaping head wound. Fortunately, some female friends that were going to the same party saw the accident. They stopped and picked him up, took him to a hospital, and he had a near-death experience. He claims he went to heaven. Was in this beautiful place where the colors are bright, intense. Everything is pure there. There's no darkness. He saw He saw orbs of light flying around, beautiful landscape, mountains, valleys, rivers, fields of grass. I'm kind of not exaggerating, but embellishing a little bit here. Fields of wheat, trees with the fruit of life. Eventually, people everywhere walking around, happy, joyful, smiling, laughing, joking, having the time of their life. There's no money in heaven, no bodily functions to worry about. There is no time. Well, off in the distance, he sees this light coming towards him. It's a ball of light, like as bright as the sun almost. And it got bigger and bigger. At first, it was like a billiard ball, and then a basketball, and then a beach ball. And it got closer and closer. When it was just right in front of him, it stopped and materialized into a beautiful being of light. Tall, about twice the height of an average human being. Maybe 10, 12 feet tall. And the energy that was emanating was a very special energy, like a nuclear type of energy. Brilliant. And the outline of this spirit of light was as if drawn with a fine quill pen. And he realized that he was in the presence of a very special being, God, the Creator. But among other things, the Creator said to him, and I'm going to use my best impersonation here. And this is something to remember, because these words came from the Creator himself. Something to remember. And you know this man, he was in a car accident. They don't make these things up, you know, these people. If you've ever been in a car accident, I haven't. Thank God. They do happen, you know. People die on the highway. So there was no reason for him to make this up. Logical? Okay, continuing on. So these are the words, among other things. I don't want to go into the whole story that the Creator told Lufamoso. You ready? My best impersonation, deep voice, and all. Man will prey on man until man learns to pray for man. P-R-E-Y, man will prey on man, my friends, until man learns to pray, P-R-A-Y. Isn't that amazing? Think about it. In the words, the Creator himself, such meaning. That's why we should be praying constantly. And it doesn't take much. Our bodies, our brains are hardwired to be able to do it. It just takes the will. Now, some people, I understand, might not have ever prayed before. But that doesn't mean they can't. It's easy. And there's no need to wait until you get into a real dire situation. Just establish that relationship with the Creator of your soul and spirit. Become a friend. You should be able to communicate with your Creator. And when you really do make that connection, and I challenge you, that is the challenge, you'll feel the hair rise on the back of your neck. You'll feel goosebumps on your skin. You'll know that you have made that connection. Well, my friends, something else I want to talk about, moving on to another subject, something near and dear to my heart, is the extraterrestrials that are out there. Here on Earth, you know, over the centuries, we've made progress where we are in the universe, astronomy and science. It's come a long way. At one time, they thought the world was flat. Imagine that. The mindset of the people thought the world was flat at one time. Until Columbus sailed the ocean blue and proved that it was round. And then Copernicus said, no, people, the Earth is not at the center of the universe, and the universe doesn't revolve around the Earth. The Earth revolves around the Sun, and the Sun revolves around the center of the universe. So now, the next big step in our evolution is, there is life out there. Surprise, surprise. You see all these movies, most of them are negative. Oh, alien movies. Oh, the aliens are going to destroy us. My friends, logically, if they exist, and I believe they do, of course, it's, for me, it's like a ridiculous question. If people strike up a conversation with me and say, ask me, do you really think that there are extraterrestrials out there? And I say, I know there are. I don't just believe, I know there are. In fact, Dr. Stephen Greer, I watched one of his, watched and listened to, both, really. One of his little videos from Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. And he had a very interesting theory about the ETs that are out there. They're conscious, just like we are. When I say conscious, I mean awake. Not dreaming. Awake. Not sleeping. Awake. Aware. Aware of your surroundings. You're moving your eyeballs around. You're looking. You're breathing. You're living. And these ETs also are doing the same. Essentially, then, we are all conscious beings, and they are what you could call people, like us. They're just different. They look different. Here on Earth, we've got black people, white, yellow, Asian, red, American Indian, all these different colored skins. But out there in the universe, there's different kinds of people with different heads, different colored hair, different colored skin, different texture of skin, taller, shorter, wider, humanoid, I think most of them, you know, two arms, two legs, and a head. There's the typical grays. You've heard of the grays, the extraterrestrials. I don't like calling them aliens, really, that are out there. I think they're the most commonly known. And so I was talking, you know, if they wanted to, Hollywood always exaggerates, and they give us these movies. Not all of Hollywood is like that. You know, I can say some good things about Hollywood. I think they're doing a great job with producing films and teaching us about other people in everyday life, true stories. It's just the fantasy violence movies that I think are useless, really, and have no value, and could possibly even influence some of these active shooters that we've seen in the past. Not a pleasant thing to discuss, but that's reality with those kinds of movies. Hold on, let me close the door. One of our dogs just... went back in. She opened up the door, so I had to close it because I've got the TV on in there. I don't want to disturb them, and I don't want them to disturb me. Anyway... so these ETs, I was talking with my friend today, and he said, well, how do you know that they're out there? Well, for one thing, here we are in a spiral arm of the Milky Way galaxy, and we're approximately 15 billion light years from the center of the universe. So as I mentioned, after the Big Bang, when the universe began forming itself one solar system after another, and one galaxy after another, and here we are. And I've said this before, I always like talking about it, all this life here on Earth without going through all the different types. You know all the different life forms that are here, insects, amphibians, reptiles, mammals, birds, fish, thousands, millions even types of bodies. The Creator is the creator of bodies, planets, worlds, suns. And if all of this life here on Earth, and it's a veritable paradise, you know, if all this life on Earth happened by accident, like maybe an atheist might say, then logically it could happen by accident elsewhere, right? Logically, anywhere in the universe. But if there is a creator, and that creator has the power and knowledge to create all this life on Earth, then logically that creator would have the power and knowledge to create either the same or different, beyond our imagination, life elsewhere, anywhere in the universe. So either way, you know there's life out there. That's logical, what I just said. So there's a book I think you should check out if you have the time. One of my favorite books, I'm going to read from it for you. It's called The Contact Has Begun. And it's about this man. He worked on the LA Times Metro desk for about 25 years, and then he retired. In fact, he shared the Pulitzer Prize for the LA riots back in the 90s. So he was a pretty excellent writer working for the LA Times Metro desk. And in the book, The Contact Has Begun, he talks about how he was home one night by himself. His wife was out of town. He was getting ready to go to bed. And it was a pretty much normal day, just like the other days. He watched a little television and was preparing to lie down in his bed when all of a sudden he was beamed up onto this extraterrestrial spaceship. And he spent 3 days there. His wife wasn't due to come back until after that. So no one really missed him. His wife might have wondered why he didn't reach out to him during those 3 days. And he explained it to her when he got back, you know. So on board the spaceship, he went through an indoctrination, orientation of what these ETs do. They're one of the dominant species in the universe, and what they love to do is fly around the universe and come up to uncharted solar systems, and apparently even after millions and millions of years flying throughout the universe, they're still coming up to uncharted solar systems. Isn't that amazing? That'll tell you just how big the universe is. And what they do is they set up an observation post, if you will, and observe if there are any life in the solar system. They find some life, then they watch it evolving. And some species that they observe are very fierce and warlike. And the goal is to wait and see if they are ready to join an intergalactic federation of planets, become a part of the cosmic community, the galactic community. That's what they do. That's what their goal is. Now, some species they come upon are so warlike that when they do evolve technologically, so where they start making their first steps into outer space, they stop them from doing that. They can, with their technology, they can sabotage their rocket ships, and then they will never find out ever, you know, what's wrong. They become bewildered because they've tried everything they can to try to leave their planet to go into outer space, but they're stopped from doing so because they're too warlike. The bottom line is that space is supposed to be a peaceful frontier. They don't want any warlike species to go into outer space. That's why I personally don't like the Star Wars movies. I have a very big problem with the word Star Wars, because it's not right to bring our fighting and warlike tendencies into outer space when we don't know what's out there. We still don't know there's life out there. I mean, we've got all these movies that are fantasy, science fiction. They're not reality. Until we actually make contact with them, we don't have a clue really what they look like. I mean, I've actually heard, though, that some of the characters that they dress up in the Star Wars movies and Star Trek do in fact resemble some of the real ETs that are out there. So they've been guessing pretty well what they look like, some of them. Suffice it to say, there's thousands in the Intergalactic Federation of Sovereign Planets alone, according to this book I'm about to read from. There was, back in the 90s, 26,000, probably more like 27,000 now, different species that belong to the Federation of planets, and that's possibly just within our galaxy alone. Imagine that, 26,000. Imagine going to a conference, if you will, and maybe a stadium or a huge, huge conference area where you get to meet all of those 26,000, see what they look like, all of them at different stages of evolution, peaceful, right? Not warlike. They might have been in the past, but not anymore. Loving. When a species evolves during the course of their evolution, they get to a point where they love each other. They love their neighbors. They just adore them. They think they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. Now, here on Earth, I mean, you see a lot of hate, especially with the politics. You know, they don't have anything good to say about it, about the opposition. Not one single thing, and that's wrong. But some of them get paid to do that. They get paid to cut people down. They don't have anything good to say about people. If you don't have something good, I mean, first of all, didn't your mother ever tell you? My mother did tell me. If you don't have something nice to say about somebody, don't say nothing at all. But if you're going to criticize somebody, please say one nice thing, like with Mr. Trump, you know? We watch CNN all the time, and they're constantly attacking Mr. Trump about one thing or another. And I'm not of one political party or another, really. I'm a people person. I like the person. The party doesn't really concern me. But since Mr. Trump has been in power, they've been at his back, at his throat the whole time. The Democrats, that is, not Republicans. You know, the 50 million that voted for Mr. Trump, I think most of them still like him now. But if you're going to say something criticizing, give him a little praise also. It should be a mixture of praise and criticism. Try to praise more than you criticize. You know, what can you say good about Mr. Trump? Well, I think he's a fairly good-looking fellow. He's got a good disposition. I think he's friendly with people. You know, when he he kind of fights fire with fire, you know. That's businessman. That's the businessman in him. And I've seen him smile, and I've seen him be sad too. And it hurts me to, you know, when I see him depressed with anybody. Joe Biden also, I like him. I think he's got a great smile. There's so many good things we could say about people rather than the bad things, you know, because if we keep up the hatred, you know what's going to happen? I'm telling you what's going to happen. We're going to self-destruct. There's no future in hatred. So remember what the Creator said to Lufthansa. Man will prey, P-R-E-Y on man, until man learns to pray for man. So you get a choice. You need to pray. That's the key to loving your neighbor. Or you can go down that road of hate and contribute to our self-destruction. Not good for our eternal souls when we leave here one day and have to be accountable for our life and what we did, what we thought, words that we spoke. I guarantee you, some of these people that are spewing hate, all kinds of negative words out of their mouth, they're going to be accountable for that, because, you know, I'm a fellow human being, and I've read of people with near-death experiences. I told you, I'm very well-read and researched about near-death experiences. I've read all about the life review, the judgment day is coming for all of us. And you're going to see how you interacted with people throughout your entire life. You're going to see your whole life in review. You're going to see how you hurt people. Going to see it from different perspectives, from the perspective of looking, being back in your body, in their body, feeling their emotions, their sadness, their pain, if you will. It's not right. You know, we can be so much better as human beings. We have a very bright future. We've got our children to be mindful of, and their children, future generations, our planet. We need to look after our planet, do whatever it takes to reverse any global warming that we have started. That's a debate which could go on and on, but, I mean, the evidence, to me, in my opinion, is overwhelming. The deforestation throughout the planet, the forest fires, the polluting atmosphere. It's obvious to me. But anyway, going back to the ETs, let me read from my book here. And so the man's name, I didn't mention his name, Phil Kraft, K-R-A-P-F. He's been beamed aboard the ET spaceship. This was back in the late 90s. And he's having a good time. They're taking good care of him, feeding him this food, all kinds of food. And it's made out of vegetable matter. You know, they can, just like in Star Trek, they can take some, like box of stuff, you know, like little small pills, put them in a microwave kind of machine, and voila, you'll have like a plate of a sizzling steak with mushrooms, or maybe sausage, or Kellogg's cornflakes with sugar, or banana cream pie. And it's all made out of this vegetable matter, which has exactly the right amount of nutrients and calories for the body. You know, not too sweet, just right. You could eat a whole banana cream pie and you would be thoroughly nourished because it's made out of this vegetable matter, which has all the ingredients that a body needs to function optimally. And they know this. And so you could create all kinds of, imagine any dish that you could want. Any kind of sweet, if you're an ice cream lover, or you're a pie lover, or you like a juicy steak, or maybe prime rib or rotisserie chicken. You wouldn't have to worry about all the antibiotics and the preservatives because, you know, it resembles identically the flavor and the look of the real thing. But it's got the right amount of calories and nutrients for the human body. Anyway, so let me start reading here. I'm going to take my eyes a few seconds to get accustomed to the print here. There's one thing about computer screens, my friends. I wonder if you are experiencing the same. You look, and I've been, actually, I've got the sun in the distance, so it's in my eyes a little bit as it sets behind the trees behind our backyard. But I work at a computer all day. I have a stand workstation. But I notice my eyes get tired. You know, it's the glare. I think the light from the screen. And I'm trying to get back to reading some more hard copy books, you know, to help my eyes. And I think our eyes do get kind of blinded, so to speak, a little bit by the lights of the computer screens and our cell phones. You know, it's good to also read some real hard copy books. And I do like reading out loud. So let me pick up here. The situation is he's just woken up. And he's still going through the orientation on this ET spaceship called the Goodwill. That's a good name, isn't it? It's about a mile wide, mile in diameter mothership that was hovering on the other side of the moon. And so what they do, I was explaining that, they go around to these solar systems, and then once they determine that a species is ready to be inducted into the Federation of Sovereign Planets, Intergalactic Federation of Sovereign Planets, they begin beaming up these people from all walks of life throughout the entire world, doctors, teachers, soldiers, firemen, policemen, all kinds of people, politicians. And they pick them out. They know exactly who they want, and they call them ambassadors. And eventually, their task will be to go back to Earth and then spread the news, to put it in the media, because right now the media, they don't believe in UFOs, most of them. You know, some of the more famous newspapers, and television stations, television news channels, you know, they don't treat it too seriously. I know they've done some somewhat serious documentaries or broadcasts before in the past, but generally speaking, most of them don't believe in UFOs, flying saucers, ETs out there. I think probably because they're young souls, you know. You consider that we're all souls. Some are older than others, you know. That's logical if you believe in past lives and reincarnation like I do. You know, this planet is just one of many out there that are inhabitable. And in the scheme of things, and I've talked about this before, the objective is to graduate from this existence with a enhanced knowledge of spiritual matters. You know, we're born into this planet, into this world, with like a 20-watt light bulb in our soul, and the objective is to get to 100-watt, you know, before we die, just as an analogy. And so what do we do to increase our light on this planet? We live good lives. We're kind to others. We're generous. We take care of each other. We try to love. We try to say positive things, speak positive things. We pray for each other. We worship the Creator, thank the Creator for our existence, because we wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for the Creator. We thank the Creator for everything around us, for all the food that we eat, our blessings, the money that we make, our houses, everything. God is good to us. You know, the Creator is good to us. Not with everybody. For one reason or another, you know, other people are in less fortunate circumstances, so to speak. But we're all in the same boat, You know, sometimes people are just a victim of their circumstances. Could be due to their family, their ancestry, you know. Poverty, sometimes people can't get out of poverty, and it's a sad situation. But anyway, we pray for them too, right? So they're telling him about the human species here. And he's got a room on the spaceship like a Holiday Inn room, and they're bringing him this food, and he's chowing away. And, you know, he can eat just about as much as he wants, and he's not going to, you know, pay the penalty for it, you know, because he's just eaten like a couple big pieces of banana cream pie or eaten a sizzling steak with mushrooms, you know. So he says, they told him, the human species, I was told, is the most diverse that the verdants, that's what they're called, the verdants. They're like the gray ETs that are out there with dark eyes, big dark eyes, has ever encountered. Such diversity is a rarity in the universe of civilized beings, and although the verdants have come to expect the unexpected, this came as a mild surprise to them. Until they discovered humans, they had never encountered a species in which there were wide character variations between individuals in the group. That is, the species might be good or evil, or any graduation in between, but never good and evil existing side by side in the same species. Additionally, each individual was a microcosm of the whole. That meant we could judge the character of an entire civilization, and this is them speaking to Phil Kraft, by simply studying one individual, Tom. That's the name of this ET. His name is Tom. If we found a moral individual, the species itself, as well as all other individuals, was moral. Where we came across barbarians, the species invariably turned out to be barbaric. However, discovery of human beings and the infinite variations in character that constitute the species threw a monkey wrench into that formula. Never before had we seen cruel and remorseless individuals that sit side by side with kind and compassionate ones within the same species, Tom said. Destructive and murderous people walk among the caring ones on Earth. Tyrannical governments rule over peaceful and gentle people, while immoral people exist under benevolent governments. This phenomenon, this range of diversity among humans, is absolutely fascinating. They came to understand that humans not only vary from individual to individual, but also between individuals and the group as a whole. It took some time for the Verdants to make these distinctions. Your long history of warfare, which we have personally observed, told us that we were looking at a savage race, Tom continued. On the group level, we witnessed international conflict, corruption, thievery, the rape of the environment, the plunder of natural resources, and the unspeakable cruelty of genocide. On an individual level, we observed mendacity, thievery, murder, child abuse, hypocrisy, sadism, and cowardice of epidemic proportions. All of these things spoke of a depraved species, Tom explained, but closer scrutiny revealed individual accomplishments in the arts, music, literature, and architecture that demonstrated a surprising nobility of spirit and mind. It was these redeeming qualities that caused the Verdants to change their minds about us. Humankind's status was upgraded to acceptable after the Verdant scientists had enough data to confidently predict that the species could be safely welcomed into the intergalactic community with certain reservations. So, it wouldn't be a stretch to say that humankind will find its place in the heavens thanks to the refined, intelligent, gentle, cultured people who walk among us. It was their contributions that caught the Verdant's attention and convinced them that the species was worth nurturing. This nurturing of the human species presented a unique challenge, they said, one that they had never faced before. Typically, when helping to prepare other species to make the transition from planet-bound animal to star traveler, the Verdants simply shared their technology with the entire civilized species. But that formula won't work because of humankind's unrivaled diversity. The goal in this case is to preserve the redeeming qualities in the species while ensuring that the darker elements of the human character, personified by the dangerous rogues of society, are isolated. In other words, to resort to a platitude, they wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That is, the better nature of humankind, represented by the gentle people, the artists, the thinkers, the lovers, the dreamers, the scholars, the builders, the hundreds of millions of moral people who live ordinary lives of decency, would be welcomed into the Intergalactic Federation. But there would be no place in the cosmos for the wicked and immoral, those who by their very words and deeds on Earth have demonstrated they are not fit candidates for membership in the cosmic community. One prime example of those to be excluded would be leaders of governments whose record on human rights falls short of minimum standards. The Verdants have decided that the best approach to achieve these goals is to encourage the good people of Earth to police themselves, to take responsibility for ensuring that dangerous scoundrels are quarantined and not allowed access to the heavens. Any failure in this regard could lead to loss of privileges for the entire species. This could mean being forced back out of space until such time as humankind demonstrates that it has resolved the problem and can keep the troublemakers restricted to the planet. How does humankind rate overall in comparison to the norm among the various species in the planetary community, I asked? Taking the top 80% of the population and discounting the other 20%, who we consider irredeemable, man is inherently good, the one called Robert replied. When the species takes its place in the Federation, it will consist solely of the top 80%. Can the bottom 20%? I asked, leaving the question hanging. Several moments of silence passed before several of the extraterrestrials started speaking at once. The one called Gus decided to field the question, and the others deferred to him. We do not deal in cruelty or death, nor do we inflict pain, he said. But we also do not tolerate dangerous rogues who cannot or will not abide by the standards and rules of civilized society. He was speaking, of course, about the intergalactic community because, as I have been told earlier, the Verdants do not interfere in the internal affairs of other species. I think we should leave it at that, he said. I interpreted the latter statement not as a suggestion, but as a directive, so I exercised discretion and dropped the subject. In terms of native intelligence, humankind rates at about a 2. Certainly no higher than on 3, on a scale of 1 to 10 when compared with other species when they are first brought into the Intergalactic Federation of Sovereign Planets, Robert continued. I was extremely disappointed with that assessment, and I suppose my face showed it. But that will improve, he said. It always does. Left alone, he said, the human species would require another 2 million years, according to the best estimates of the Verdant scientists, to achieve absolute intelligence. There was that phrase again, absolute intelligence, I said. It was really a question. The point at which it becomes biologically impossible to become any more intelligent. There are limits to everything, Robert said. But again, he pointed out the relatively low rating of a 2 or 3 on a scale of 1 to 10 is due to the immense diversity of the human species. And other species have intelligence levels that do not deviate more than 1% from the most intelligent to the least intelligent individuals. For all practical purposes, except for very slight variations, that means that every individual is of equal intelligence. If we compared your most intelligent people, say the top 10%, your species would rank at perhaps an 8 or a 9, Robert continued. But the sheer vast numbers of the less intelligent, draw down the average considerably. Again, this is an anomaly that we had never experienced before. We previously had thought that it would be impossible to find such a wide difference among individuals in the same species. However, with the proper guidance provided by the available technology, man will not have to wait for 2 million years to achieve absolute intelligence. The process can be speeded up enormously so that a race of humans of super intelligence can be created within no more than 2,000 or 3,000 years. In terms of physical appearance, humans are neither more attractive nor less attractive than any other species. Humans simply are viewed as a species with unique characteristics, just as every other species brings to the planetary community its own unique physiology. Most of the space beings are what could be described as anthropoid in form, although with great variation. But despite these vast differences, an appearance between the species that do evolve into space travelers, they all have at least two physical features in common, I was told. One is the ability to grasp with enough dexterity to make tools in humans, and these ETs themselves, that would be the fingers with the opposite thumb, opposable thumb. From this amazing anatomical feature come the tools that lead to mining, manufacturing, agriculture, and dominance over fire. All of these things eventually lead to outer space. There are some pretty strange, at least from my perspective, creatures out there. Based upon descriptions that I heard, for instance, not all of the grasping appendages are necessarily of the human type. Some star travelers have dual prehensible organs that are every bit as efficient as the human hand. Even the elephant, with its dexterous trunk, has the physical ability to perform simple grasping chores, although it lacks the intelligence to take full advantage of that faculty. The trunk does fall short, though, of the fuller range of refined movement that the human hand possesses. It can pick up a peanut, but it cannot operate a pair of pliers. Well, my friends, I've got 1 minute left. That is from the book, The Contact Has Begun. I hope you enjoyed it. It was nice talking with you. Thanks for listening. I love you. Keep up the good work out there. I see a lot of strength in everyone, my fellow co-creators out there. Pray, please remember to pray, especially with this election coming up. Pray to your creator. I love you, and may the creator of the universe bless all of us, everyone. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.